Testing 1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3, testing.
I'm Ben McAdams, and I represent Utah's 4th Congressional District. Before I was elected last November, I was the mayor of Salt Lake County. It's my belief that Washington might work better if we thought about governing the country the way mayors approach leading their communities. In this podcast, I'm hoping to show you what being a member of Congress is really like, and whether it's possible to run this country the way we run our local governments. Welcome to Washington.
Today I'm talking with Aves Ahmed, who I've known for the last couple of years. Aves has been active in the Utah Muslim Civic League, and I got to know him in that sense when I was the mayor of Salt Lake County, and we have a strong and vibrant Muslim community here in Utah, a lot of them in Salt Lake County, but really living throughout the state. And I feel like Aves, I kind of felt like I connected with you early on. We grew up in the same area. I'm in Davis County. You're in Davis County. We went to high schools that are neighboring high schools. We were a little bit high school rivals. You went to Davis High. I went to Viewmont High. And then we both went to the University of Utah, although I think I'm a few years older than you.
Yeah, a couple.
But I don't know. I just felt a connection with you. I felt like we had a, you know, a lot of background that was similar. And then you're Muslim and I'm Christian. And you were helping me to understand Muslim culture, Muslim religion a little bit. And I instantly, I think maybe because I felt a connection with you, I felt like I also was eyes which through which I was able to see the Muslim community and see actually a lot that we had in common. So maybe tell me a little bit your backstory, how you came to Utah and why you came to Utah.
So my father was a physics professor in Nigeria. So he was actually also the son of a teacher. And he got a scholarship. And at that time in the 70s, Nigeria had discovered oil. So the Naira was very strong. And so they tried to import a lot of the brain capital from different parts of the world to help educate their populace. And so my dad went there with his best friend at the time in the 70s and did really well. And so I was born there and we lived until about I was 2 years old. So my dad's dream was to go back and retire in Pakistan. So he went back, invested a lot of his money that he had made in Nigeria, and he lost a lot of it due to corruption and just due to, you know, bad infrastructure. And so when he was in Nigeria, he had had a passport and he'd been able to travel all around the world. And so he had a diplomatic passport. So he had thought that the U.S. was a place that actually resonated more with his core values and his vision as a human being. So he had a family member in L.A., and so we moved there when I was about 5 years old. And shortly after, he had visited Utah, and he had really liked that culture better than California. He really liked and identified with the LDS and the culture and the values here. And so that's why he actually picked good old Kaysville, Utah. And kind of my youth in that sense was kind of interesting. I didn't notice it as much then, but now as I look back at it, at Davis High School, I was one of maybe 11 minorities in my graduating class of 1,000. And I think maybe one of 2 Muslims, and the other one was like my dad's best friend's son had came there. And so it was very interesting because in that bubble, folks thought that the LDS church was maybe a majority in the whole world, right? So they would always ask, like, hey, what is this, you know, what is this religion that you're kind of a part of? And, you know, just acting like it's just some weird Eastern
obscure little religion.
Exactly. And so, you know, so that actually made me very interested in religion and comparative religion, because it's very hard to see in us versus them when you start becoming friends with people. And like you mentioned, you kind of, you know, LDS or Christian or Hindu is not that. It's Ben or Aves or Ryan or whoever it may be. And so we moved to Utah when I was 5. And as you mentioned, I'm a Davis Dart. And then I went to the University of Utah. And since then, I mean, I've been an online entrepreneur and, you know, been involved in different business ventures. But the history of our community.
No, go ahead. Just don't tap the table.
Oh, sorry. Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. So the history of our community is that in the 80s, we had a lot of economic migrants, like my parents and stuff, a lot of educated people, some not, but people coming here at their own will for prosperity, a lot of professors and those sort of folks. Then what happened is from about 98, 99 to about 2010, there was a lot of refugees that came. And we had a lot of people from the Somali community, from the Bosnian community, from the Iraqi community, from the Afghani community. And so you had this huge influx of people, but they also, needed a lot of resources. So you kind of had this disproportionate kind of influx coming in. And that's changed since maybe 2011, 2012 with this Silicon Slopes. But the phenomenon that created was that a lot of people created different mosques. And the reason for creating those different mosques was, let's say, for example, someone just came and English wasn't their first language. They would create a small little mosque so that they could be worship and be taught kind of and spoken to in their same language. So that was something that was kind of hard for us to kind of control and coordinate everybody. And the very interesting thing about the Muslim faith is there's over, like just in our mosque, the main mosque, in Khadija Islamic Center, there's over 120 nationalities that go and pray there on Friday. I mean, Ben has been there several times. And so it's a very, very diverse population with a lot of different, nuances and cultural understanding. So now we have about 60,000 people, and the phenomenon that kind of brought is we had so many people from different countries in these different centers. So we kind of wanted a way outside of the religious arena to kind of unify those people and get them involved civically and in other capacities. And that's kind of how the Utah Muslim Civic League came about.
I felt like it was the job of a mayor to get to know my community and to be there and to be familiar with and to be a face that people are familiar with seeing around. So you guys probably wanted me to better understand you. I wanted to better understand your community because I felt that was my job. So you invited me to, I think the first time you invited me to come to your worship services on Friday afternoon. And beforehand, there was a lunch and a little bit of Islam 101, kind of what we believe in that. Yeah. And I'll say, I think maybe the way that you worship is different than the way that I worship, but I immediately saw some pretty strong parallels of a belief in God and a belief in family. And, I have four kids and I want to raise my kids to be good people and to cherish some of the things that I cherish. And I saw that you and the Muslim community was fighting for the same thing, to just, community and sense of belonging and sense of giving back. But then also I was impressed that it not only were you engaged with internally with your own community, because as you said, there's a pretty broad array of individuals in the Muslim community, from pretty successful, well, highly educated people who are coming here because of jobs and good paying jobs, and others who are coming here because they're fleeing war and famine and they come with nothing, right? And you guys rally around each other, I think, to help to create opportunities for each other. But I also love how you engage with our community. I've worked side by side with members of the Muslim community working to help the homeless, or, a food drive for people in poverty, or when I was working on on homeless shelter, one of the sites that I was considering was right by the mosque, and people came out and they wanted to the community was engaged in a constructive way, wanting to understand what this proposal meant, what it would mean for the community, asking some really informative questions, and if that site was chosen, what could they do to support it. And so I think over the last few years, I feel like I've become more familiar with the Muslim community and have been really impressed at how I think we have so much in common. So when I woke up late last week on Friday morning and read about the news in New Zealand about the shooting and that somebody had, this manifesto and this fear of a Muslim community in New Zealand and shooting and 50 people were killed, And just my heart went out to our Muslim community here in Utah. And, you know, I hope that nothing like that would ever happen. I think part of it, you guys have done a great job of helping members of our community understand you and feel this affinity with you. Now, I think, you know, mayors have more of an opportunity than that, than just regular people maybe don't visit a mosque, maybe have never been to, I think I would guess most people have never been to a mosque, just like most Catholics haven't been to the Mormon temple, right? But I felt, you know, even though it was a world away, New Zealand's a world away, my heart went out to my Muslim friends here in Utah of what that might do to the psyche of a community to feel that sense of vulnerability. And I guess I want to know how that impacted maybe you, your loved ones, your neighbors. Did it have an impact?
Yeah, it had a big impact. And when I heard about this, right, obviously, you know, you have more of a, you know, it hits very close to home if it was in your exact faith center. But the hard thing that it was for me personally, and I usually don't post on social media about these things, but I felt that I needed to write something. And it really was that we feel the same pain, although we don't post about it. But, like, you know, when the Jewish attack happened, we were there, we were with that community, and we feel the same sort of pain. So my feeling was, how do we communicate that, yes, this is something that happened to our community, and yes, we as leaders, you know, we're responsible for the rhetoric that we put out there. We're responsible, you know, for these different things. But at the same time, this is a problem that's happening across many faiths in many different instances. And we wanted to put out there that, look, like, we're part of the human family first, right? Like, most people don't know. I mean, even though that we're all humans, and even the Muslim faith is an Abrahamic faith. Right. So even in faith, we're brothers. Right. We, you know, we take our lineage back from Ishmael, while, you know, Christian lineage is back from Isaac. Right. So we have many different points of relationship. Right. So that day, it wasn't like, hey, this just happened to the Muslims. It was the same pain that we constantly feel. So I didn't want to, you know, express myself like that. Because that wasn't the case. The other thing that was amazing was I had, you know, Ben reached out and text messaged me. Sim Gill called and texted. And so many other people did the same. And, you know, we had three or four folks from the FBI, Department of Public Safety, come, right, to our services. Chief of Police Mike Brown, he gave security that day, and he's been very generous before and after. So the thing that...
The governor's office even had somebody there.
Yeah, absolutely. And so the thing that showed, right, is we've been working on these relationships for a long time, right? And that's one thing that we've kind of stressed to our community is, look, like, you know, and we've stressed it, and it wouldn't have worked if folks like Ben and stuff like that didn't show up, right? Like, we stressed that look, like, these guys are not just here when they're asking for a vote. These guys actually love and care about our community. And then when these times come and they see that, that helps them build trust in the system, right? And that's a big problem that we can talk about that we've been trying to address, right? Many of those folks, the criticism, even from the outside, is that they don't feel like this is their home. They feel like the countries that they're from are their home. And even here, when you talk to some of them, they don't feel like, you know, they're really at home. But when incidents like that happen, when our partners, our friends, they show up, then they feel that this is their home. And then they double down on taking ownership of this country, which is why, you know, I think our mission is very clear and very important, is we find that they have two misgivings. And one of them, or, you know, you could say two issues that they have in order to fully buy in on civic engagement. One of them is that they feel that their vote doesn't count. And the second is that they feel that their vote doesn't matter. So in terms of vote, their vote not counting, it's that they actually physically think that from the communities that they've been a part of, that there's going to be some voter or election fraud and someone's not going to count their vote, Second,
that may have happened in their home country.
Exactly.
Right? Yeah.
And then second, they feel like their vote doesn't matter. So they think, okay, maybe we are from Somalia or Pakistan or one of the other, you know, 120 countries. And they feel like, well, look, we're the minority here, right? And so if we, you know, all get band together and vote, our numbers really aren't going to make sense. So, you know, we insisted to them in the last election that, hey, in a local election, few thousand votes really do matter, right? And then so they bought in, and then, you know, many races like yours came down to, you know, a certain amount of votes, and they really felt that their vote mattered. And then, you know, you came and thanked the congregation after, which was very meaningful for them. So there's this sense of trust that's, you know, that's been built. And like you said, that's like a multi-year process. And people only see the fruits of that labor in incidences like this.
Mm-hmm. Can you describe to me maybe some of the emotions that went through your mind or others in the community, fears, reaction from the congregation in the aftermath of New Zealand? What was that like?
So, I mean, prayer for everybody is a very sacred time and a very vulnerable time, right? You're going there, and that's probably the place where you want to feel the safest. And so, you know, people in our community, they, you know, that definitely gave them room for pause and room for, you know, thought, like, are we really safe? Are we welcome here? And then the very interesting nuance that this actual particular tragedy brought out was the fact that it was Facebook lived, like live streamed, yeah. Right? And so, you know, most people watched that, right? So everybody had those images in their brain in horror. And
I couldn't bring myself to watch it, but I talked to somebody as we were leaving the mosque who said that he was watching it in bed, and his son came up and was talking to him and asked what he was looking at. And I just can't imagine, you know, seeing that horror and wanting to protect your child from that horror, you know, and seeing it. But yeah, but then wondering, could something like that happen to me?
Yeah, and that's a legitimate thing that folks in our community, you know, definitely thought of. And it's still actually on our mind, because as that happens, or as folks don't pay the proper condemnation or give it the proper rebuking that it needs, other people get inspired by that, mm-hmm. right? And that's definitely been, you know, that issue that we've had in the past is something like that happens, and we will get some letters or we'll have some suspicious people around. And so definitely, and my situation with the video was, on one hand, I was like, I don't want to watch this at all. And on the other hand, I'm like, you know, I need to feel the pain and the carnage so that the work that we're doing, it makes me more motivated to do that. Because obviously we have a lot of other things going on in our life, professionally, personally.
Yeah.
So that emotional, you know, identification kind of actually helps me say, okay, look, like, I'm really angry about this. You know, look at, you know, what happened. I mean, and it would literally look like it was like a video game. And, you know, now there's, you know, stories coming out about the folks. And when this guy was walking into the mosque, somebody came up to him and said, you know, hello, brother, because he was trying to, like, identify himself as a human being so that this wouldn't happen, yeah. Right? And so definitely our community is, you know, it's heartbroken. There is that, like you said, there is that feeling of, like, hey, we're very vulnerable. Is this kind of thing going to happen to us? And is this kind of thing going to escalate into something, you know, far, far worse? But again, like, with the, you know, the response that we've had, the partnerships that we've had, people do, especially in Utah, they do have this trust that, you know what, like, we're part of this family, and everybody's watching out for us.
So, I mean, I'll admit that I think our relationship started because I think that's what mayors, I felt like that's what mayors are supposed to do. Mayors go to mosques and synagogues, yeah. And churches, and that's what a mayor does. And it hit me on Friday morning that I was reaching out to my friend out of concern and a community that I care about because I could empathize with maybe how they were feeling, and it made me sick, and it made me feel for them and want to show comfort and support to them. But we're in a day and age where it's maligned, where there's a lot of rhetoric against our Muslims, brothers and sisters here, American citizens. You know, does rhetoric matter? And what is it like to live in a time where Muslims are made, I think it feels maybe worse in the last couple of years than it's been in my lifetime, where you're made to believe that you're the cause of the problem or immigrants are a cause of the problem.
Yeah, rhetoric is absolutely very important, right? And, you know, there's ways that, like, we're going to try to, you know, combat that. But at the same time, many people get their information. They're not exposed to Muslims, right? They're not exposed to many immigrants on their day-to-day life. So the opinion that they're going to get of them is going to be what they hear on the news from our political leadership, from Twitter, from wherever wherever they get it. And so we, as people who have that voice, or you know, we have to be very responsible with our words, because people are going to take those at face value. And, you know, on our end, that's why the work that we're doing, I feel, really matters, and the way that we're doing it in an organized way, because our people have been in the mind that, hey, you know what, we're doing charity. We don't need to be famous for it. We're doing good works. We're going to, you know, we're going to be who we are, and you know, kind of give charity with the right hand and the left hand doesn't know, right? That sort of thing. But now we want to do it in an organized way, right? Like, let's say, you know, giving scholarships to folks that are not Muslim, or, you know, being like, we've through the Khadija Islamic Center, there's this group called the MUST, and it's Muslim youth and for the homeless. And so what they do is they have these red vests, and they go out there, and they're young, you know, men and women, and they're giving 200 at least 200 meals a month, if not many more, right? So our goal with that is to publicize that, look, like, we are part of this community. We want to support. And, you know, you have these folks that are so bright, like some of these immigrant and refugee kids. And, you know, they'll be the future leaders, future surgeons, future lawyers. And we just have to, you know, we have to support and mentor them like anyone else, and consider them an asset, right? And instead of thinking, okay, this is a liability.
So, I mean, you've lived most of your life here. You're a successful businessman today. So many in the community are so successful because they work hard. And yet you have this new community who was coming here, maybe not by choice. They were forced out of their country by war or famine or natural disaster. And they've come here legally as refugees, and yet they're coming with nothing. And one of the things that I love about what you're doing is these are people who are in this country, and what you're doing is forging a connection to this country, that this country is their home. And you know, some of these refugee groups have been here for 10, 15 years, and I get to know some of their kids. Their kids are university students. They're going to be successful business leaders. They're that second generation immigrant, you know, that have come here, and they're pursuing the American dream. And they have, what's great about this country is they have a shot at the American dream, that they can come and they can succeed. And your work, why I think it's so important, not only educating people like me to understand how much we have in common, but it's helping these newcomers to this country to feel a part of this country.
Absolutely. And my story that I think illustrates this is my dad was a Sunday school teacher for the mosque when I was growing up. And I used to always tell him, I'm like, Dad, you know, you work so much. Why are you wasting your Sunday morning, you know, like, teaching these kids? And, you know, he'd be like, you know, you won't understand right now. So I was like, okay. And so maybe 8 years ago, there was a graduation for Sunday school, and I would, you know, there was a barbecue. I would get dragged there, you know, just to support my dad. And I showed up like, you know, 30, 45 minutes late. And so the imam saw me, right? And he said, oh, look, there's a vase walking in. He's committed to be the Sunday school teacher next year. And I was like, yeah, right, okay. And so I'm like, okay, a nice joke. And so when time came for the Sunday school to begin, Dr. Salman Masood, who has been the president of ISGSL, and he's also an anesthesiologist and a dear mentor of mine, he called me a few weeks before and said, hey, I heard from the imam that you were going to be a Sunday school teacher. I'm so happy and so excited. And I'm like, okay. And, you know, out of some respect for him, you know, I was like, yeah, you did hear that. And I'll be there, you know.
That's how the Mormons do it, too. So. Yeah.
It's the first Sunday, and I still have a vivid memory of this. I'm driving over there, and I'm like, oh, why did I commit to this? And I pulled in, and he has a Land Cruiser. His Land Cruiser was there, and I'm like, okay, if he's a anesthesiologist, and I think he's one of the chief anesthesiologists at Shriners, and he has five daughters and full life. So I'm like, okay, look, Avais, if this guy can do this, right, you should give it a shot, right? You're not too busy or you're not whatever. And so I started teaching there, and I got to know these kids, you know, and then they weren't just, you know, immigrant and refugee kids to me anymore. They were, you know, Ismail and Daoud and Zaki and all these guys, right? And wow, the questions that they asked me at, like, you know, 10 years old, you know, like they knew that I was a business person. They'll start asking me questions about complex things about real estate and things like that. And I'm like, wow. And I'm like, you know, or even when we were talking about religion and stuff like that, you know, they ask me these amazing questions. And I'm like, man, if anybody put a little bit of effort on these kids, if we treated them just like we, you know, treated anybody, these guys would, you know, they'd be the future leaders, like you said. And I mean, like, they didn't know, you know, like, for example, how to get into school, how to do FAFSA, how to do all that kind of stuff. And the last thing on this point would be, there's a book called Outliers, right? And it studies the different outliers in data. And one of the things that it talked about in there is the kids that grew up in these, you know, kind of gang and poor societies, they would look at, you know, who has the nicest car on the block, right? So we'd say, okay, it's a Cadillac. What does the guy do? He's a drug dealer, right? It was as simple as that. Like, okay, now to get the nicest car and the nicest house, we're going to be, you know, drug dealers. Now, if we expose them to leaders, business leaders, to congressmen, to lawyers, to doctors, they're going to say, oh, yeah, well, my friend Ben's a congressman, so you know what? I could do that too.
Yeah. Well, I really appreciate your outreach to me over the last couple of years. I've grown by getting to know your community better. I would hope that people in the Muslim community know, you know, they're a religious minority in Utah, but I hope they would feel appreciated. You know, I believe in the separation of church and state, and I also believe that having people of faith in our community makes us better. And, you know, you and I are of different faiths. But I want you, and I want your community, and I want the youth in your community to embrace faith, because I think it makes our society a stronger place. I think it is a fabric that holds our community together. And I hope that the people in the mosque know that I support them, maybe not because that's what a mayor is supposed to do or a congressman is supposed to do, but because I want to see you feel not a religious minority, but to feel part of a community that values you and what you bring to our society.
Oh, thank you very much. And you know, it's simple things like in our spiritual tradition, there's a story where this person goes to the teacher and says, look, like, our community is really broken. And I want some tool to figure out how to have, you know, to start making the community get together. What can I learn how to do? And the teacher told them, learn how to make very good tea, right?
Yeah.
So maybe in this state, it's non-caffeinated tea.
Right.
But, you know, it's something very simple, right? And I remember, you know, you came to some of the Ramadan dinners and, you know, you came. And people already, just by something simple like that, like, wow, he's here. He's part of our community. Yeah. And that's something that, you know, is already starting to be ferment.
One of the things that I was proud of as mayor is I had another member of the Muslim community, Nasir Khan, come to me. And Nasir is an avid cricket player.
Yeah.
And that's his passion.
Yeah, yeah.
And he said, at the time I didn't know him well, I've gotten to know him very well, but he said, you know, Mayor McAdams, there are no cricket fields in where we can play cricket. And I thought, what can I do about it? How many cricket players are there in Utah, you know? But he actually came with a solution. He said, but did you know there are a lot of soccer fields here that aren't used on Sunday because Mormons don't really play sports on Sunday. So these soccer fields sit empty on a Sunday, but Sunday's not my day of worship. If you were to build as mayor soccer fields and separate them by about 15 feet and put this cement pad in between your soccer fields, that's a cricket field.
Wow.
And would you consider doing that? So I went to my Parks and Rec staff and said, could we do this? And they said, well, absolutely. So we started doing that, and we've made cricket pitches throughout Salt Lake County, and there's a vibrant cricket community that uses these fields that would normally sit just empty on a Sunday. They're active and they're out there. And so I've gone to watch, I don't even know the rules of cricket. They've tried to teach me several times, but I've gone to watch them play cricket and was really proud of that collaboration too, that at really no expense to the taxpayer, we were able to help several thousand of my constituents, my taxpayers, have an amenity that they can enjoy in a way that helped them to have community and strength and strengthen that fabric amongst themselves. And that's, you know, it's not just understanding each other as people of faith, but it's also making a community that at no cost to anybody is more accommodating to everyone.
Absolutely. And the thing is, small, simple gestures like that make people feel at home.
Yeah.
Right. And even when, imagine, right, if the friends and family visit them from out of town, and they say, hey, let's go, we're going to go play cricket here, or out of the country, they're going to be like, wow, this is your home. You know what I mean? You guys, they've even built, like, you know, your the sport for you.
So in closing, tell me what, is there anything you'd like for listeners to know about Utah Muslim community?
So there was a Pew Research poll, and it said about 70% of people that didn't meet or have interaction with a Muslim had an unfavorable opinion of a Muslim. And 70% who had interaction with a Muslim had a positive interaction, right? And the same thing probably goes for Muslims and view and lens about other people. So we could sit here and talk about all these complex theories of how we can, you know, solve these problems. But go out and get to know each other. Right, meet your Muslim neighbors, and if you're a Muslim, go out and know who your neighbors are, interact with them, know who their kids are, and be a part of the community. And what our plea and what my commitment is going to be is we're going to make a big effort to be part of the community civically. So registering to vote, if you're already registered, go out there, vote, start running for positions. Be involved in the political process. And the other thing that we are going to commit to is we're going to commit to charity and service projects that are outside of our community. We don't want to be known as this community that is, you know, just supporting folks back home or folks that are part of our ethnic or religious background. We want to be, and it's not that we want to be known, that's our authentic self, is we want to help and support the folks that are our brothers and sisters and our community members. So thanks so much for the time. And I really appreciate all that you've done to be engaged with us. And I've had the exact same feeling ever since we, you know, met, that felt like a kindred soul. And I think we're going to, you know, we have a lot of the same vision, and hopefully we can benefit the community together.
Thank you, Avay Samet.
I want to thank you for listening to Washington. What I'd really love to hear is from you. To follow this journey, subscribe for free on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, the KSL radio app, and anywhere you find interesting podcasts. To be part of this experiment in making the world's most powerful city responsive to citizens, please email me at tips@loudmouthproject.com.
I'm Tom Luma, and this has been Washington. We'd like to thank the village that made this episode possible. Andrea Smarten, Amy Donaldson, Allison Heyrin, Danny Akana, and of course, Congressman Ben McAdams.